Thanks so much, Lori and everyone in the ensemble, Vicky. It's great to have such a wonderful team helping us in worship and especially lifting their voices and making such beautiful music together this morning. It's a wonderful part of worship. So, I don't know how many of you have the experience very often of being surprised by Scripture. Sometimes, especially if you've been in church for a long time, maybe there are things that we sort of have come to be familiar with and feel really comfortable, kind of know, oh yeah, that story's about that, and I've heard it talked about a lot. Or maybe you've just gotten a chance to read your Bible that you feel like, I might learn some things, and maybe I don't know everything that's coming up, but I don't feel sort of, something's coming out of left field on me at all. But I'll admit that for myself at least, and maybe for you too, coming into the Scriptures this morning, I had a little bit of that experience. I was familiar with both of them, but I hadn't looked at them closely for a little while, and so I had some associations, and I think we can hopefully all relate to that, but sometimes we get certain things locked in our brains of how Scriptures go or what the primary meaning or underlying theme is, and then when we look at it closely, again, maybe like it did for me, it catches you off guard a little bit, and God can speak into your life in a new way. I had really thought of the potter's house in my memory of Jeremiah being asked by God to go down and watch the potter and learn about what God was doing for Israel as being a much more kind of soothing, comforting, almost even romantic. Like if you do a Google image search, for instance, potter's house Bible verse, you'll see things that look more like that famous scene from Ghost than you'll see things about other stuff for a potter's house where you're kind of, kneading and punching and molding and restarting the clay or throwing it down really hard on the wheel because I've gone and spun pottery a few times as a group activity, and that's the thing that they always tell me is I'm being too soft with the clay, that I really got to like smash it in there, or if I'm getting it ready on the wheel, I got to kind of be violent with how I get it down on there. And that's a little bit more of what we see actually in the verse about the potter's house, God restarting things, even though, again, in our heads a lot, we might think more of the very gentle, soothing, sculpting little parts around as a wheel moves around. And then I had thought about the passage of Jesus bringing fire and division, and I'd heard that verse before. It's kind of well known as being one of the more difficult sayings of Jesus, especially because we think of him as being the Prince of Peace. And so if he's saying, I didn't bring peace, but brought division, it just sort of hangs out there. What do we do with it? And, I think, especially as we're going through a book of Luke and we're experiencing things in our lives where we see division around us a lot, unfortunately, in our society right now, it's good to get into the Bible, see what God specifically has to say about things we're actually experiencing. And even if it sounds difficult or scary, that we ask God to give us a message and give us some ideas and solutions for things that we are actually experiencing. But I found that as I got more into the context and saw the whole picture of the whole teaching Jesus was doing in sequence through that I found this verse actually very encouraging and insightful. Didn't mean that the things I think Jesus is ultimately getting at are easy, but my expectations about how difficult, how painful the ultimate picture of Jesus and bringing division was not as hard and overwhelming as I thought it might be. I've talked before in our sermons about how it's good at times in our lives to ask God to bring us to a place of healthy discomfort. Some of you, I know, like if you're football or sports fans, you're maybe used to coaches talking about, if you're just comfortable, you're going to get lazy. You're not going to continue to grow. I know that that's something that Urban Meyer preached a ton. If you follow Buckeye football, like to make people just a little bit uncomfortable and see how that could stretch them. And maybe it's not exactly like sports, but I do think that idea of saying, I don't have to be used to everything or completely familiar with it or feel completely safe all the time to know that God will bring me through to useful experiences. And unsurprisingly, this is probably going to feel like that one of these weeks today with the Scriptures that we're looking at. It could feel like a huge downer that we're considering these types of passages with all the things that are going around us, all the divisions that we see, all the things that we may even be experiencing in our own lives, in our own relationships. But hopefully, because we know these things are really happening and that God really wants to deal with things that are really happening, and not just make us pretend that something is not happening or pull us away as an escape, that God can get all the way into even our most difficult life experiences, that we're ready to see what Jesus' teaching can do for the things even that feel scary or uncomfortable. I'm going to say a little short prayer for myself, though, as we go through this, and you can sort of think it to yourself as we go along, too, because of what we're going to be going through today. Lord, these verses are especially uncomfortable and scary, but I trust you to form me in a way that's best. Help me to be open to a healthy discomfort, to come away today with something transformative. Amen. Again, I think it's really good to be open in this posture today, because not only are the verses themselves about a type of healthy discomfort, but they're also about something even more than that, but that expands on it, about productive conflict, which I'm sure for many of us often sounds like an oxymoron. I know when I was growing up, I would tend to see conflict as, especially interpersonal conflict too, as purely sort of a contest, duke it out, who's going to win, who's going to lose, who's going to have face, who's going to lose it, who's going to look good, who's going to be humiliated. It was all about power battles. It was all about that, you know, maybe unhealthy confrontational contestations. This was true, I have to admit, in the way that I would look at conversations and interactions with my parents if we were having conflict. If I was going to get in trouble, I wanted to make sure that I could try to argue my way out of it or make things really difficult for them if they were somehow making things difficult for me. It could be true in my relationships with my siblings or friends. If we were trying to decide what we were going to do and I really wanted to do something and they wanted to do something different, that same thing, we got to argue it out. You got to have a winner and a loser, so you get to do the thing that you really want to do. And especially when it would get into things with interactions with peers around popularity. And I had seasons in my life where I felt like I got rejected and got picked on and got bullied, and that was really hard for me. But sometimes what I decided to do with that, with other opportunities of conflict, was then to try to use ways that I could be smart or good and take that out on other people too, to show, well, you know, some people are making me feel less than, so maybe to help prop myself up, I'll pick on somebody else a little bit too. I think we know how much those views on conflict, those views on confrontation, are becoming really predominant in our culture. It feels like so many of our interactions, so many of our disagreements have that destructive, unhealthy aspect of conflict around them almost all the time. It can feel exhausting and overwhelming to see it happen or to feel like we might get sucked into it, even if we're trying to avoid it overall. And probably a lot of us also have some relationships in our lives that maybe even we feel like they've been lost, that there's a breakdown there, or at the very least that they feel much more fraught, like we have to walk on eggshells around each other when we don't remember that before maybe 3, 4, 5, 6 years ago. And again, that's a very hard thing to acknowledge. It's something that maybe we don't always want to have brought up before us, but if it's a reality of what we're experiencing, I believe that God wants to speak into our lives about it. For me, my examples of having more productive, healthy conflict, I think really began especially in college. And it wasn't in the expected ways that you might think right at first. The first time I had a really difficult, like, charged conflict, but that felt healthy, was in a class that I had. It was about Shakespeare and film, and one of the assignments we were supposed to do with my professor, Dr. Ungreit, was to create our own adaptations of Shakespeare's plays and say how we might maybe change it to a new, more updated time, more contemporary, that people could relate to. And we'd turn in the assignments, and we'd workshop them together as a class, and he would just eviscerate us when we gave our presentations. If there was anything that seemed like it wouldn't quite work or that we didn't quite think of right, he would make sure, he would lay it all out. And he wouldn't be super like, you know, good job, but whatever. He'd just be very plain spoken. I think this would be a problem. You would have trouble with this. Are you sure that this captures the theme that Shakespeare was getting at, or did you just change it for no reason? And at first, that felt a little bit overwhelming for me, and seeing how other people responded and how we decided to give constructive criticism to each other was a little bit difficult too. But very quickly, especially when we got our grades back and it felt like we were going to get an F, but then we actually got a B or an A, and he was acknowledging our effort and our thought, even though he was also helping us grow. And as I had a relationship with him, I got to see that he was creating a safe space where you could be blunt, but there was no risk of being humiliated, no risk of losing his respect. He just wanted to get as far into the things that could make something the best outcome as he possibly could. And that meant a lot to me to see how he did that. I tried my own stumbles of this with roommates that I lived with when I was in college, and you know, we're all living on our own for the first time, and so different people's cleanliness or how much clutter they had or what you do with food and whether you share it or you're supposed to have your own and everything. Sometimes we did a good job of saying, you know, we can't just avoid this, let's bring it up, but we'll bring it up kindly and productively. Sometimes that worked, and sometimes we got in fights and it felt awkward and it seemed like maybe we didn't do the best job. But those were relationships that we really had to figure that out. And for me, those were some of the first ones to have the stakes of, I can't just go off all crazy and then my mom or dad, like I did with them, might forgive me quicker and get along. I have a little bit, my roommates might not want to get along with me if I do a really bad job. So I got to learn how to do that well. What really helped, I think, the most overall, though, is when I started to interact with students who are coming to college with different life experiences, different backgrounds, different families and ethnicities, and different even worldviews and perspectives than I had grown up with. And I would have interactions with them. I wanted to be friends with them. I wanted to have a good project with them in a class. But we maybe initially, on prejudices or initial judgments we might have, felt a little bit, maybe not quite suspicious, but at least wary around each other. Like, is this person going to respect where I'm coming from? Is this person going to understand the experience that I've had and how it's informed what I'm bringing to the table? Or are they just going to judge me? Or are they going to say that that perspective doesn't matter to them? And there were people who came to me and had a lot of grace and a lot of kindness that even was proactive, even was uncomfortable sometimes, but that was good for me to grow as a person, because women who I was in classes with, people with indigenous backgrounds, especially at Florida State, where there's always a little bit, where I went to school, where there's always a little bit of controversy because they have an indigenous people's mascot. People of different races or people who are immigrants would talk to me about what their experience was that I didn't have a good understanding of up to that point. And they'd be honest with me about the things that they experienced that were important for me to understand, but also give me the chance to have a process of learning and to show that I was a person of good faith and goodwill and to build better relationships than if we didn't acknowledge that there were things that sometimes we might feel uncomfortable about. If we actually acknowledged them and went through them, it meant that we were a lot closer. In all of those examples, hopefully we can hear how the conflict was, in fact, necessary to get to the best outcome, whether it was for a good project or a good relationship. But in none of those cases was it about winning or losing between the people who had conflict, or about making one person feel really bad and one person look really good. It's important, though, also to notice that each of those things also started with an experience of some kind of division. Division of perspective, a division of experience, division of power in a relationship, or even division of personal hopes for what an outcome would be in a particular situation. But we can see that that division was not meant to be the end of things, the final word. The division is the beginning of a process that does have some conflict, but that ultimately has the purpose to bring something new and better and reconciliatory. We can remember that this type of conflict is, in fact, possible, and then is really important for us in our relationships. And the Jeremiah passage today shows us that that starts, and we can have a foundation for that type of conflict in our relationship with God. God gives us the example with Israel, and that I believe that God continues to have for people and societies to this day, that there can be empowerment, in fact, when we submit ourselves to God's forming and constructive, productive conflict with us and saying, this is wrong, we need to restart and get things right and look at what's happening and have a different response so that you can ultimately be healthy. We should hear that as much as we hear the gentle, almost romantic, soft, manipulative forming in the final parts of this. Both, I think, are true, but we need to hold both of them in knowing what our experience with God might be. And that way we can know how to recognize and how to participate in healthy conflict, to resist unhealthy conflict, where we might want to duke it out with God because we feel defensive or vulnerable. And so we try to avoid tension with God, pretend or hide, maybe like Jonah, from things that God wants to do that are for our best. Or we have bad interaction with God and we just get defensive, and ultimately we will end up with worse wounds or a persistent problem if that's how we go. I think C.S. Lewis understood what this productive conflict with God looks like really well. If any of you have read The Voyage of the Dawn Treader, there's a story of a boy named Eustace who's just been a problem for all of his friends, all of his family, all the people on this journey. And he goes on an island and puts on a special armoring that turns out to be cursed and turns him into a dragon. And then he can't be around anybody. He's absolutely miserable. He has all these giant scales. He doesn't know what to do about it. The ring is pinching him. He's feeling horrible, feeling hopeless. And the Jesus figure in Narnia, in The Voyage of the Dawn Treader, Aslan, comes to him as a lion and says, "I can help you, but it's not going to be easy." And he takes his long, sharp claws and essentially claws and rips off the dragon scales from Eustace. And it is painful. And there is an element of letting go of something that Eustace thought was going to be valuable, which was this gold armband and other treasure that he was with. But it also had this amazing experience of relief and healing, and then restoration with his family and with the rest of the crew on this voyage, because he didn't have to isolate as a dragon any longer. C.S. Lewis gave us that wonderful picture of, yeah, it's not easy, it has that element of conflict, and yet, if we didn't do it, what would we be missing out on? When we're able to see how God can do this for us as a gift, it's not a punishment. It helps us then be open to the possibility of being able to experience this with each other in our earthly relationships as led by God. Now, it's important we remember when we try this that there are different power dynamics when God does something for us and when we do things for each other. We shouldn't try to play the role of God for each other and dominate each other when we do this. We're supposed to be more on an equal footing and have God lead all of us. So how do we know that that is what Jesus is getting at in Luke when he says, "I didn't come to bring peace, but I came to bring division"? That it's not division where we're supposed to be stubborn and arrogant and hold our holiness up against other people, or to be diligent and stubborn and combative against evil people that are different than us. How do we know that that's what Jesus is getting at? Again, it's good we're going through the whole book of Luke because it's about seeing that whole context, seeing all of the teachings that Jesus strung together and how they relate to each other. I promise we'll see that. First off, we should remember that this verse actually comes right after the verses that we read last week about being watchful for God to come into our lives, and how being watchful means that we root ourselves in the perspective of God. So we don't watch to be able to snitch on the other servants or to mistreat them and show that we're better. We watch to take care of each other, to do good for the other servants. And then that we know that God will come to us, and God is a master who serves us and cares for us and models that for us in our own relationships. Also, the full dialogue that Phyllis read so well for us as it continued into the rest of the teaching shows that Jesus is encouraging us to interpret signs and to be reconciled to each other. And those all flow right directly with each other, so they are meant to help us understand the meaning of each one together, not each one separately, and then trying to figure out how they could possibly all make sense when you have reconciliation on one hand and division on the other. As we've talked about before, Jesus knew that his life and ministry were inevitably going to bring things to the surface in the world and in people's lives that needed to be changed and transformed. For some people, this might feel really exciting and encouraging right away, but for others, it would probably feel uncomfortable and challenging. When important issues and events are revealed, it's unavoidable that the divisions of people's relationships to those issues and events will also be exposed. Whether that division brings productive conflict, where people learn and work through challenges together and circumstances are positively changed, or if that division results in destructive conflict, unhealthy arguments, where people are only defensive or only self-righteous, and then things get worse, That all depends on how we're able to hear Jesus' other teachings and lessons through the rest of this passage. The interpreting the times piece is one that is especially important. We see it in Jeremiah too, by the way, because God, as the potter, says that I will be responding to the things that are happening in real life for nations and for people, whether or not they're combating with each other or helping each other, whether or not they're following my instructions or whether or not they're going their own way. Jesus is saying the same thing. It helps us to take things away from where we might just create our own personal preferences and camps and then duke it out no matter what the actual lived reality for people is. And helps us look at something where we're interpreting what's actually happening for people and everyone who's a stakeholder. I learned about this the most in marriage myself. I had a pastor when we were getting ready to be married, Wendy and I, who said the best advice he ever received, and that's the same that I find myself passing on to people too, is that when you have a time of conflict, that you need to be able to remove that conflict from the two of you and see yourselves as a team working on that conflict. It's very easy to say, the problem is my husband loads the dishwasher wrong. The problem is my wife goes to Target too much. And then decide that you're going to fight with each other about the other person. But that just can lead to snowballing of unhealthy conversation and communication and ultimately unhealthy relationship in your marriage. So if you can say, we have an issue where we want to be on the same page about how we clean things. We have an issue where we want to be on the same page about how we manage our budget. And then you work on that together. That's still a conflict. It's showing that there might be some division of perspective about what you do. But your approach says, I'm going to read the signs of the times. I'm going to separate this from us and look at it as something that's different than who I am. And that helps me have the right relationship for how I address it. It's true that often when things come up that need to be noticed and they expose our differences of experience or our differences of perspective or desire, that our first impulse is to pick a side or to pick a preferred outcome and do that instead of looking at the actual reality of what's happening for everyone and all the stakeholders who are a part of it. So Jesus is highlighting that we're supposed to do the opposite of that in order to have productive conflict. We wouldn't look at storm clouds and say, well, too bad, I am a sun person. I love the sun, so I'm going to say it's sunny, and anybody that tells me to get an umbrella, too bad, because I like the sun, and so it doesn't matter what I see out there. And I'm going to fight with you about it as much as I can to show you that it's sun, because I'm a sunny person. If we don't do that with the things on weather, like Jesus is saying, then we should hopefully be able to learn how to resist the temptation to do that in our relationships, to do that with social issues, to do that with other types of conflict. Again, we also should really notice how Jesus emphasizes the importance and ultimate goal of reconciliation between people at the end of this passage. We can't look at the division that Jesus is proclaiming without noticing that so soon after, he encourages us to be reconciled with each other. We're supposed to be honest about the actual issues and problems that are happening and any divisions that are revealed, because that is part of Jesus' ministry to us. But we're supposed to seek a process of healthy, productive conflict so that ultimately we can have reconciliation as an outcome. That's why Jesus linked all these things together. And I think it's especially informative, by the way, that Jesus frames this reconciliation to us as being the person that has the potential to be wrong. He could have said, when you're going to the magistrate and you've got that person in a really vulnerable position, you know that you're going to win the case, just make sure that you're kind of nice to them and don't pile on. Right? It could have been about grace and forgiveness or kindness that way. But instead he said, look at the potential where you need to be reconciled because maybe the case won't go your way. Maybe the debt will end up being yours that has to be repaid. It's a really hard thing to hear right now. And there's very little modeling of that posture in our culture. But I do think it's important that Jesus framed it that way, probably for a reason. All of this is really hard and vulnerable, especially the idea that when we have reconciliation and productive conflict, that we're open to our own potential to not get it right. It costs us something. when I think that I might have to change? What happens if the other person doesn't soften themselves the way I decide to in trying to follow Jesus? And so then I'll probably look bad. I'll lose a chance at having advantage. Why would I put myself up for that if I don't know that the other person is going to act this selflessly? Think of all of the ways when we have difficult interactions with people. What do we picture to ourselves when we're driving home alone in the car, when we're in the shower later? It's about that zinger that puts the person in their place. It's about other people saying how great we are because of something that we did. That's our natural impulse, and that's okay. I understand why. But is it possible that we could picture saying something that actually made everybody get along and save face and not feel humiliated? Isn't it possible that we could picture someone saying something to us that made me realize, I changed my mind. I'm glad I heard that. It's hard, but that's really good for me. Jesus, I think, is saying that we're supposed to try to have that same perspective, to have those be the types of things that we picture as much as picturing being the one who looks the best. Remember the sermon on the plain, Luke 6, that we looked at early in our Luke series? That's where it talks about blessed are the poor, blessed are the mourners, blessed are the persecuted. Jesus is saying that we're supposed to have success and winning completely redefined for ourselves when we participate in God's kingdom. We're not going to have the same attitudes about power and benefit. It is better to be the person who's steadfast in trying to grow by hearing another perspective and who keeps reconciliation possible and hanging out there even when there is difficult conflict than to be the person who takes all of the traditional earthly measures of power and benefit from an interaction. It's better, Jesus says, to be that person. Now, I want to make sure that I clarify that people don't hear I'm trying to say that we should open ourselves up to abuse or to excuse people who are walking all over ourselves or others. We may, in fact, need to set a healthy boundary. That's part of healthy conflict, is also knowing where those healthy boundaries are. But we can remember that one of the things that God especially does for us and that we can try to do for each other is to create communities where there's refuge of love and health that we can prioritize so that when we go and have conflict that ends up needing to have a boundary set, we know that there are people that are going to uphold us and support us and help prevent that abuse so that we can still have that posture of, I still want to learn, I still want to have hopefully maybe the chance of reconciliation instead of trying to get back at someone with my own abusive and manipulative medicine. Unfortunately, we have to admit that the church has not always been a place that's done a great job of living in the possibility of God's healthy, productive conflict. Some of the expressions of Protestantism have been more about separating and saying that someone else, some other sect of Christians, is really bad and evil, and that's why we're breaking off. Or sometimes, especially nowadays, when we can choose whatever church we go to, we make decisions based more on a consumer mindset of just what makes me feel the most comfortable or what's a way that I can avoid conflict. So sometimes the predominant culture that we find ourselves living in, even in the church, is where we want to sanctify ourselves and demonize others when conflict comes up. Or we want to just avoid the chance of productive conflict, especially if it means I might have to change, and just go somewhere else where I can avoid it all and paper it over and start something new. So we probably do have a long way to go, as the church at large, I'm not talking about any one particular church, and that we might even have to work against some of those models or cultural influences. I believe, though, that from the scriptures that we saw today, that whether we as a church always get it right or wrong, that God is there to be our potter every single time and to do it productively, even if it's not always easy. And in God's Spirit, to help us have our own productive interactions in our relationships and to find that transformation, again, even if it's difficult and painful. But that in God's grace, it can happen and it can bring wholeness. And so I want us to stay in that place, even though we know there's not always good models around us. But that, because there aren't good models around us, we need to ask God to bring it up in our own lives that much more so we can help God bring transformation to ourselves, to the world around us, to the church culture around us. If that's what's dominant, we need to help bring it back. Let's try together to remember our own propensity for being wrong and instead be willing to hear the perspective of others that's divided and different from our own. Let's be willing to look at the full reality of a problem when it's brought up, instead of just starting by picking our own team and our own preferences. Let's have faith and reconciliation with others that can come, even if someone might try to take advantage of us and be willing to seek it. And most of all, let's have faith that we can, in fact, have healthy, vulnerable discomfort with God, and then let God do work for productive conflict in our lives and see what amazing new possibilities can come from it. Maybe, just maybe, if we start to experience that productive conflict for ourselves and we learn to recognize it, we'll be able to do it well together. We'll be able to help the world around us that seems to only know the most destructive and unhealthy ways of having conflict. And we can bring more of God's beautiful new life to more and more people and more circumstances that we see. That's how I want to send you out this week. Wherever it is that you may be, whatever relationships you're dealing with, whatever issues that you're seeing brought to the forefront, may you know God's presence with you as the good and gracious and transformative potter. May you have God's love and strength even when you go through the things that are difficult as part of that. And may you see yourself come out on the other side with God's empowerment to share that same gift with other people, not punishment, that gift with other people, and have conflict that brings healing, reconciliation, transformation to you, to relationships, and to the world. Go in grace and peace.